This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
I'm Dave Detman, also known as Dr. Gadget. I've got a new podcast called The Big Idea. And every week I talk to inventors and visionaries who made it big in their respective industries. We'll tackle weekly trending tech, provide inside tips for your success, and go deep dives on the latest and greatest innovations. And I know you're going to love this part. I'll also have plenty of free giveaways. Who doesn't love free stuff? So listen to and follow The Big Idea with me, Dr. Gadget, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We're going to talk a little bit about some of Goldberg's projects, what's going on with his garage, what he thinks his first project's going to be back when he's back in the garage. And we're going to get into this very cool car built by Speedcore for Ralph Gilles, the head of design over at Stellantis. We'll get into that and some more, but first, here's Geico. Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to Geico becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent. All right, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, moderator DeAndre, here with Bill Goldberg. How are you? You can go ahead and bring that music down a little bit more. There you go.
You got a power booster.
Yeah, it's good. We're working with we're training some new guys. We're training new guys, and it's good. It's going well. So listen, it was a Memorial Day weekend. We've got there was a lot kind of happening. Took a couple few days off. Got to watch the Indy 500. A good race. It's always a good race when nobody gets really hurt. There was a few crashes. Some people got checked out. I think everybody's okay. Marcus Ericsson was the winner. He's the racer from Mexico, I believe. Former Formula One driver. That's not necessarily the easiest thing to say. Put on a good show. Part of Chip Ganassi Racing. Scott Dixon was really kind of leading the race. I don't know. He had a bunch of laps up front. Something like 95 of the 200 laps he was leading the thing. And with a handful of laps to go toward the end, he comes into the pit. Of course, everybody's going to be coming in. And I guess he just, and I don't really know the specifics, but I guess he was just he got a penalty. So maybe he was just coming a little too fast out of the pits. And the penalty meant he had to go back around, drive through the pit again, and just do it over again. And I got to tell you, I really think he was a shoo-in to win. He was dominating. He was so far ahead. He timed the pit correctly. And just this little strategic faux pas here, just this little thing, just a little overzealous, and broke the speed limit coming out of the pits. I think that's what it was. And the reason why I don't know for sure is because I started watching the event at home, and then we went to we walked in the neighborhood to the bar, and they had, all the screens on, but you can't hear it anymore. And I'll tell you, like, when the sound's not on, Indy 500, the broadcast, they didn't do the best with like the lower thirds, you know, with the text. They weren't running the captions, and it wasn't till like the last three laps that they turned down the sound of every other game and they turned up the Indy 500 in this giant place. And this bar is it almost looks like a sports book in Vegas. It was just like a giant wall of screens and all these events are up there. So I was like, what's the penalty for? And I'm like yelling at the bartenders. I'm like, they're like, I don't know. So I think it was just a speed violation coming out of the pits. And yeah, just that little extra lap and go through the pits, he finished in 20th, which is a super bummer for him. But great for Marcus Ericsson. Marcus only has, I mean, only, I know this is all tough to do, three IndyCar wins in 52 starts. But look, it was a fun event. It was, I think, 300,000 people, which is damn near sellout capacity. The first time in 3 years or something that they did Carb Day, so all the parade and the ceremonies and stuff ahead of time. Now, you know, everything's lifted, you know, so they were able to put on a big show.
So it looked like everything back to normal pretty much.
It really looked like it was back to normal. I mean, the place was absolutely packed. It was a hell of a party. The whole thing leading up to it looked great. And as much as they showed during the race day, I would say it looked back to normal, which is interesting because we're not too far off of the F1 race in Miami, and all the press surrounding that is just like all these celebrities were flying in, and celebrities that aren't necessarily known within the automotive community. You know, it's just, you know, David Beckham and Tom Brady and, you know, all these, you know, Jennifer Lopez and like all these celebrities or whatever are there or people like that. And I get they're trying to turn, you know, kind of showing like this is a bigger draw than just for the car world. But the Indy 500 has been just one of the biggest parties of all time and continues to be.
They're two completely, you know, I mean, you know, yeah. You've been to both, right?
Yeah.
Two completely different entities, right? You could see how disgusted the normal, and I said this before, but how disgusted the normal F1 fan was walking around in Miami, seeing the different crowd that was there,
yeah,
celebrity wise, because they were there just to be seen. It wasn't a passion of theirs, right? Indy, we all know what a party Indy is. And I can't believe, there's no way I could view the Indy 500 with no sound. There's no way. I couldn't watch it for more than 10 minutes.
The first,
I mean, that's an event that as you see after 3 years of not, you know, taking place.
Yeah.
That thing, that's like Kentucky Derby times five, you know, to me.
Yeah. Anyway, it was good. I can't wait to get back out there again. The timing this year with all these other events and stuff didn't quite work out, but we'll get something planned to go out there again at some point. But look, it was good. It was fun. It was fun to watch. Everybody did a great job. You know, great to see Marcus Ericsson win. I know he's been busting his ass out there like all of these guys, and it was good. Look, there was, I don't know, four laps left. They come off a long yellow, so like 12-minute delay. Like all the cars were brought into the pit. They had to put umbrellas on them and fans into the cockpits, and the drivers wouldn't overheat. I forgot which driver it was, but one of the drivers had some kind of issue in getting the car started, so they all had to go around him on the restart. It was really kind of like top 10 or something. They had to go around him. That was a shitty moment for that driver, and I forgot who it was again because there was no goddamn sound. And then yes, at the very end, someone else went off the track and got a little squirrely and ended up in the grass.
And nobody went in, got airborne and landed on their roof like no, the practice.
No. Yeah, not like that in practice. That was a tough crash. Can't believe he walked away from that. But yeah, so the last lap, they were, I mean, really just going for it, kind of battling for first, second, third. And then at the last minute, somebody goes off the track. So the last lap was actually under a yellow. And it was still pretty fast. They didn't slow the whole thing down. It was a fast lap. But you could see the moment when somebody radios and says yellow, and you instantly know you can't change places that point. So Marcus Ericsson's like, I can do it. I can do it. I can see it. It's there. It's in front of me. And somebody goes, we've got a yellow. And he's like, I didn't even cross the finish line. I just won. Holy shit. I can't believe I just won. Because it was the only way to kind of, which was crazy because he was pretty far ahead for a minute before the second to last yellow were the one where everybody had the really long yellow. So he was in the head going, oh, I've only got, you know, five laps left. I've got a pretty good lead. I might be able to make this happen. Then a yellow happens and then everybody bunches up and he's like, great. I could have just blown it because now I've got the fastest guys ever starting with me.
Oh, my.
And he actually got a really good restart for those last few laps. And I think it was Pato Award. Yeah, Award, like second to the last lap, like tried to make a move on him, really looked like he had it. And didn't quite get it, like kind of went around him and just couldn't quite get enough before, I guess it was the turn, had to like bring him back, you know, was going high, was bringing him back down. And he just felt like he was getting a little high to pass. And if they went into that corner at that speed, he would have went into the wall. So he had to back off. And once he backed off, it was all over. And then I think later after, during the interview, Paddle's like, they were like, you look like you had him there. And he's like, it was too hot around that current turn. I would have went into the wall. Like we would have both would have veered up and went into the wall. And he's like, I could have given it a shot and crashed or just take second place, which is funny because Indy 500 is one of those races where if you're up in the front, you want it so bad. You can get on the podium and a second or third, and you're like, this sucks. and I know the team is like, hey, we didn't win, but you know, we still did great. And that sets in later going, you know what? I did take second. Like it was a good race. But in that moment, you're like, I was so close. I'm so bummed I didn't get first. But
I don't want to bring you down, but I was sitting here waiting for the Indy 500 coverage, and it was superseded by local coverage of Biden paying a visit to Uvalde after the shooting. So it was blacked out here, basically. So I didn't get to see it.
Couldn't see it at all for
the summary of the race.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of it.
Well, it was. You'll see some good clips if you go and find. I'm sure they're going to show up all over the place. But it was good. Look, there's been more exciting races in the past, but this was a good, you know, like fully attended comeback event, and it was a hell of a party, and everybody made it home safely.
Yeah.
So speaking of, you were out last week. Helping out the community, as we put it, appreciate that. But I took the SAC Mustang over to get dry ice blasting. I took it over to our friends at Ice Blast Works out here in SoCal, and we kind of touched on it before. Is they can do things mobile. They have a whole truck, a mobile operation thing going on. But I wanted to get the whole underside of the vehicle done. And the best way to do that was to get it up on a lift. So I brought the car to them, had it towed over to them, put it up on their lift, and went through the the whole process. I had since put up a couple of videos and images, the before and after shots, up on Instagram. I know you got a chance to see it, Bill. That's what we were just talking about a minute ago at the beginning of the show. But yeah, just a little recap. It's a very loud, it's a very slow process. It kind of looks like sandblasting. It's not like you're just hitting it with a power washer. It's a high pressure nozzle, and you kind of have to just go back and forth little by little as much as you want. So it's a fairly time consuming process.
How is it different than sandblasting?
So there's no real media hitting the car. It's
not as abrasive.
It's not as abrasive at all. So, and also when you see them do it. So first of all, they can turn the pressure up and down, but also you can see how they know where to pull the nozzle further away and then closer, depending on what they're running into. I posted a lot of like video stuff of the undercarriage, which doesn't have a lot of soft parts. But when I was there, they had already finished a lot of that, and they were doing the engine compartment and going through the engine compartment and then switching from, you know, like valve covers that are aluminum to, power steering reservoir, which is plastic, and to, you know, maybe some plastic covers or some wiring. They can pull it back and still clean it without really affecting any of it, excuse me, or damaging it. But once it was all clean underneath the vehicle, what we saw was a lot of like the original paint marks, when they're tightening down a bolt and they put the little paint mark on it to show that it was torqued down and it was done, and a few things like that. And these guys are good because, you know, there's a few areas like on the rear axle and around the differential housing. And they're like, yeah, there's some surface rust here and it's got the original black paint. And they said, if we hit this, it'll take a lot of that off, which you may not want to do on a concourse restoration type of car like this. But there are some cars that you could come in there and you just shoot it all off. And then you just paint it with some chassis black and you've sort of restored underneath it. I said, I didn't want to restore anything. I wanted to keep it all original.
Yeah. So to me, it sounds like the biggest advantage to this is the ability to change the pressure and the ability to blast off or clean different material.
Completely. You know, they can open your door and do the door panel if you wanted to. You know, if you've got, you know, an older vehicle, a lot of gook on it, you know, on the armrest and door, they can do all of that. And it doesn't douse it with water. Water's not involved here. That's not what's happening, right? So this isn't, you know, hitting it with a hose and a brush and some, you know, some purple cleaner or whatever. This isn't really that.
So the cleanup, the mess is just the dirt and gunk that's taken off of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Where does that go? Does that just fly out?
So that's all on the ground. Yeah, that's all on the ground afterward. You got to sweep it up or wash it away. So that was one of the things, because we talked about, hey, why don't you come into my shop to do it? And they said, well, first of all, the machine's pretty loud. They got the, you know, headphones on, and it does, you know, we did a lot on the vehicle. We did the entire undercarriage, the brakes inside the wheels, took the wheels off, the engine compartment. It took 8 hours to do all of that. You know, they were there for quite some time. And yes, although my car wasn't that bad, it does leave a little bit of a mess on the ground.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a guest. Come on.
Is that
our son, Gage Goldberg?
You're in here now. You're in here now, Goldberg. Come on down. Hey, buddy.
Say hello. Say hello to Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey. How do you look?
He's asking a question, so I'm sorry he's interrupting.
Is he at the baby?
I don't know.
Is this Hotel the Baby?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Multitask.
Yep.
Just remember that.
Got it. Anyway, so it was a cool process. A lot of people have asked me how much, and it's going to vary depending on what company you go to. Experience does play a part here. You want to go to someone that's done this before. You know, and depending on how much of the car you want to get done, it'll range from a few hundred bucks to a couple of grand. I want to say if you did the entire underside, wheels off, engine compartment, you know, door jams, door locks, you know, you're looking at $2,000, $2,400, maybe $2,500. Now, you don't have to spend that much. You can figure out how much you want to do. But, you know, another thing to consider is, you know, we wash our cars all the time, and oftentimes we'll grab like some soap and water or the pressure washer and just kind of hit underneath the car as much as you can. But after 30 years of doing that, you get a lot of soap scum and grime. So, yeah, you are kind of cleaning it a little bit. But that builds up over time. And that was one of the issues on my car. So the car is low miles, but it's been cleaned and detailed over the years. And underneath it, it just had a lot of this kind of soap scum and lime buildup and stuff like that. And this cleaned it all off and got me back to a real clean state. And there's some stuff underneath that car that looks brand new. You know, some of that the sheet metal underneath the car at this point is brand new. They did the wheel wells and even the plastic wheel wells. And with all the dirt and everything removed under there, you see the original, you know, Ford part number stamped in to the plastic of the wheel well. So very cool process. And those of you guys that are familiar with the GT40 intake, the GT40 tubular intake, and it has those ribs, like those fins along the end of the intake, they sat there and they were able to just go through each one of those little fins and get it all perfectly clean. So I'll post some more pictures of the engine compartment. But yeah, just wanted to touch on that again. Impressed with the process. And once they did mine, they went off to another car show and they did some other cars. And these guys at Ice Blast Works, they're putting together kind of a lesser expensive sort of a bring a trailer package. Like, let's go through the quick detail of what areas we should hit on the car to clean it, to make it the most presentable for an auction listing or a bring a trailer listing.
They should be set up at every, right outside of every freaking auction.
They really should. It's, listen, if you're selling your car or you're selling it for pretty good money, this is definitely something to consider. And listen, when you have been detailing your car and stuff for years and you have years of just like, you know, like Armor All and cleaners and things like that on the car, it seems interesting. It's like, it's nice to get it all off and start over, you know?
Oh yes. Absolutely. So use good soap, you know, that doesn't stain. Give you a layer on top of your skin that actually cleans it off. It starts from scratch.
Yeah. And, you know, so the next step is we're going to be bringing it to our friends at Chemical Guys, and we're going to start looking at the paint, just how to make the paint as good as possible but not burn through it. It's got when the SAC Club, when they had painted the car, they would just take the cars off the factory line and then they would just scuff it and shoot a coat of Wimbledon white over it. So they got Wimbledon white with the blue stripes with the stickers. So I want to talk to them and say, maybe it doesn't need a full paint restoration. Maybe it's too thin to get the orange peel out. And if we added some clear coat on it and then sanded it down, well, it's got the original stickers on it. We don't want to screw up the stickers. We don't want to clear coat over them. So maybe it just needs, you know, a clay bar and a good polish and maybe, you know, a ceramic coating on it. So I want to talk to them about what's going to be the best way to do to finish this up and get the paint all detailed and cleared up. So once I get that information, I'll bring it to you guys as well. And take it from there, but it looks good, you know. And it was fun to get behind the wheel and get it warmed up and drive it around the block. And I ordered some tires for it. Nothing special because the car is not going to be driven that much. But the tires on it are so old right now that it's just silly to even try to drive on those tires. It's too dangerous. They just spin too easily.
More than, I would pick a different word than silly.
Yeah. It's stupid. It's dumb. And yeah. I mean, I took it around the block to the gas station, and just leaving the gas station, I was just giving it a little, you know, a little gas just to get it, you know, pull out into traffic and not be the douche that's doing 30. And it got a little squirrely. I was like, all right, it's the tires. It's like, as much as the thing, like, oh, this car's badass, it breaks it loose. No, it's like running on four blocks of wood, you know, for tires. Yeah. So ordered up some tires. I'll just put something on. I got some, you know, nothing real fancy. I was like, oh, I should put a good tire on it. And I was like, all right, I want to get a good tire, a decent tire. I ended up ordering a set of Pirellis. It's, you know, it's like a good all season tire. I could put some Nitto triple fives on it. It was like, then I got a really good high performance summer tire for a car I'm probably not really going to drive that much. So I didn't really need anything super fancy. But that being said, the Mustang Mach 1, we've got the HRE wheels in, and I'm trying to find good tires for that damn thing so we can drive that thing and have some fun with it. It's got another show coming up, I think June 11th, Upland, I think Upland Ford. It's going to be at that show, and then we'll bring it back and do some more work on it. But I don't know. Yeah. The dry ice blasting stuff's good. What are you working
on? Sounds great.
What's going on with you? What are you working on?
Where do I begin? Well, electrical today for the garage, we're jamming, man. We got the entire roof structure finished. We're all kind of dried in. The garage doors will be delivered the next 3 weeks, it looks like. The stairs will be here within 3 weeks. And HVAC starts next week. And so, yeah, man, it's a shit show at the Goldberg Garage right now. But it's a lot of progress. Yeah, it's one thing after another, but it's the exciting times. You know, things are starting to come together. I'm going to talk to your boys at Leverack. I'm going to head out to Nebraska and visit the badass workbench guys. You know, Expel's got to come out, do the window treatment. The Benpack is sending their militia of guys out for, I think, a week and a half. Do the install of all the lifts sometime at the end of June. And, other than that, nothing's going on. Met with the concrete guys, asphalt guys last week, and got that all designed. And, yeah, it's all coming together, man. Finally, you know, 10 years after starting the pad, you know, we're actually getting there. So it's good. Got the second TRX ordered, so. Hopefully we get that way in advance prior to the opening of the garage. And, you're on the clock, Dodge, or Ram, right now. You're on the clock.
You're on the clock.
See how long we'll see how much pull Goldberg's got it over at Ram. But I'm looking forward to that one, man. We're gonna check that one out, too. But it won't be a numbered TRX, and so I can go out and drive the shit out of it with no reservations whatsoever. So, I'm looking to twin turbo that thing and have a lot of fun with it.
Okay. Right on. What do you think is going to be the first, what do you think is going to be the first project
modification?
Now, the first project car you take on in the garage, once the garage is done,
you know,
there's something waiting in the wings already. I know you're working with other shops and you got projects going on, but something to do in the garage.
Here's the deal. You can empathize with this, right? So, I mean, we've got a couple pitches out for automotive content.
Yeah.
And a couple of, well, all of them center around builds as part of the storyline. So I've got four vehicles right now that are all in line, but they're all four completely different builds,
right,
that give a variety, right? So I don't know whether I think simultaneously we're going to farm one of the builds out. Whether that'll be part of the show or not, I'm not sure. But I'm reaching out to the brothers up around Dallas or around Austin area, Iron Resurrection guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to, you know, we've got the 715 that hopefully will be built for that video game Twisted Metal that Matt's doing stunts and special effects on. And I'm going to throw an option here. This is interesting. I'll throw the option to the brothers guys. And I haven't even thrown it to them yet, but okay. I'll tell you,
yeah,
a couple of our listeners, that I'm going to give them either the 59 Biscayne, the Wanda's race car, the 70 Trans Am, or the 715. They're all three completely different projects.
Right.
Right. And, yeah, and the 90 Ram, another project. But they're all completely different projects with completely different uses and desired end results for different reasons, right? So I'm just trying to juggle everything. Show content, timing, their style, and ultimately, you know, what needs to be done first. I mean, if it was all up to me and it would be based upon fun, I'm building that 715 right now. We'd start doing the Kevlar panels on it and yeah, get that turret built for the Gatling gun on top. But, you know, I mean, I don't – oh, or the GTX. I'm going to throw the 68 GTX 440 four-speed car. But, see, that's an original car, so I don't think I want them to do anything to that. Because
right,
I want to be able to hand them something and let them go – let them do their thing, because I really – I'm really getting into their work. I appreciate their attention to detail, and I like their subtle, you know, cool way of going about things, customizing.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's as detailed as I get, but it's not detailed at all. But it's a cool array of different projects that all sound exciting to me. It's just which one needs to be done first, and which one do they want to do? You know, the others are going to be built, you know, shortly thereafter. It's just, I want them to do something for me and with me, and in combination with Goldberg's Garage and Dodge, I think it'd be really freaking cool.
Yeah, right.
You know, 715 would just be, because we're Hellcatting it up. I got a four-speed, you know, for it already. I've got a number of other things for it. So, I mean, that thing, I very much love for that to be the next project.
Yeah, but that's a cool project.
I'm waiting on a phone call. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of car projects, and not really to intentionally make this another Dodge episode, but our friend Ralph Gilles, head of design. And, hey, listen, he's been several positions, but you know, he's a 30-year veteran over at the Dodge, you know, family of brands. So
how freaking cool! How cool is it to have him as one of the guys that lead the brand? I mean, yeah, in preface to what you're about to.
So him being at Stellantis now, the new parent company. Yeah, I think he's the design chief for the company. And like we said, 30-year veteran over there. Always a great guy to talk to, by the way, and just super into this stuff. And a hot rodder as well. But yeah, so what what is the guy who is one of the top designers in the automotive industry, when he wants to build himself a hot rod, like where do you go? Like what direction do you go in? And he had thoughts about it. He had very similar thoughts to you. He's had very similar thoughts to, let's just say, Kevin Hart in this regard.
Eerily similar.
He went to Speed Corp to do a 68 Charger. Now, Speed Corp, we know they did the 70 Charger for Kevin Hart, which came out great. I think that one was called Hellraiser. And Ralph's car is called Hellucination. And yes, he must know somebody at Dodge, because he's got one of the Hellephant engines. And there he's got the 1,000 horsepower crate engine. I don't know that we ever figured out how many of these were actually made. When they came out, the rumor was something like, I don't know, 100 or 125, something along the lines of that. So he's got the 68 Charger. It looks cool. It's badass. And I get, like, it's supposed to be kind of subtle, but in the end, it doesn't really look that subtle. Like, it's, you know, it's black. It's menacing. But he had some thoughts on how to make this car, right? He wanted to do something kind of – he knew he wanted to do elephant engine, big power, but his two other sort of directives were lighter weight. It's a big car, so I want to reduce the weight and actually make the car a comfortable, drivable car. And I know that directive is often given to builders all the time, and then it snowballs into, you know, is that the best suspension? Is, you know, it's what if I do want to take it on the track? And, you know, what if I want to do this with it? And you're like, okay, but every time you say that, it turns more into a racing car, right? You start stiffening up the suspension. You're like, I want an everyday driver, but I want it to pull 1.1 Gs in the corner. Yeah. But he had a more clear directive. It's not meant to be a race car. It's meant to be a car that I hope he intends to put miles on it. So he wanted something lighter weight and comfortable enough to drive across the country, as he would say. I'm not sure the 4-point harness belts are going to be the most is going to be the most comfortable thing out there. Maybe he's got a regular belt in it as well. But Speedcore, being carbon fiber gurus, like I believe the parent company, which I forgot the name of, a lot of experience in carbon fiber, which is sort of what led to this trend and then to them building the cars. But these guys basically put together what is essentially an entire carbon fiber car. They took this unibody, if you will, and they didn't recreate the unibody as a single carbon fiber piece, but it's carbon fiber floorboards now on a chassis. The bodywork's all carbon fiber. Some massive pieces to pull that off with a roll cage in it. But now, they didn't give us the exact weight, but significant weight reduction, increased strength between the chassis, the roll cage, and all the stiff carbon fiber. It was an incredible feat. And if you follow Ralph on Instagram over the past 2 years, you'll see him starting to post a few things about this car, about just big pieces of carbon fiber, just like everything from being digitally scanned. And then as you're scanning it and putting it in, then you make the modifications, right? You look at it and go, all right, so now that we've scanned it, we know what the floorboards are going to look like. But what if I want a 345 tire on the back? You know, we don't want to cut it apart and do mini tubs. Like, let's just build it in from the get-go. So some really, really cool pieces on the car. It looks good. It's definitely menacing, if you will. You know, and he's got a nice audio system in it. It's custom classic instruments gauges. He did a rear seat delete, carbon fiber door panels, carbon fiber dash, carbon backed front seats, all part of that weight loss thing. The carbon fiber floor, wheel wells, body panels, front and rear valances, hood. There's a lot going into it. And there's I think Speedcore put up a little video of this thing firing up, and it sounds pretty crazy. This is their video. Let's see if you can. I And it's kind of cool to see it on the dyno, those guys breaking it in. And look, you've got a very tough critic with a guy like Ralph Shields. You know, he's been doing this for a minute now, and
I'd say that's an understatement. I mean, yeah. They do some over there, man. I mean, this is just the latest in their array of toys, man. I mean, but yeah, I mean, if you can't build something like that for the King of the Hill when it comes to Stellantis and the Dodge and Ram brand, and yeah. I think it's badass. I mean, any Dodge guy is going to love that vehicle. It's a completely different interpretation. You know, a lot of people wouldn't do that, but a lot would. So, you know, you can't please everybody.
Well, it's a cool project. Those guys did a good job and would like to see some pretty exciting builds like that. Hopefully we get to see that car at SEMA Show and a couple of other events. I would imagine we will be able to get a glimpse of it. I can't imagine what it's like to go for a ride in that car, simply because I'm just curious to know, I don't know, did they cut 800 pounds? Did they cut 1,000 pounds off that car? And what is that thing? What does that big bird feel like with that kind
of
reduction?
Well, look at what I would venture to guess more than 600. That's my guess. I'd say around 1,000. And I only say that because if you look at the Challenger that they did years ago, mm-hmm. They saved 400 to 600 pounds, I think it was, or 600 to 800 pounds. And that was on a car that was built, you know, in 2018.
Yeah.
And so think about the difference in weight of a vehicle built then compared to in 68.
Yeah.
You know, doing the Charger.
Right. But, you know, keep in mind, he's got big wheels on it. They custom made some HRE wheels, a lot more rubber, you know, the wheel, massive brakes. They put a chassis underneath it, a roll cage in it. So they bring back some of that weight. I think in the body alone, they probably cut a lot of weight and then added a little bit back, and in the creature comforts, big stereo, things like that. Yep. Honestly, an original engine, I don't know if you compare it to a small block or a big block, but an original engine versus the weight of the Helifant engine, I'm not
it's
sure.
It's aluminum block.
Yeah, but you got the supercharger on the top. You've got intercoolers. You've got water. You know, the water pump for the, you know, not just for the engine, but you know what I'm saying. Like the, it's an air to water intercooler. There's some things you got to add to it.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
Yeah, you know, adding a supercharger and all of its accessories and intercoolers and piping and all that stuff. I'm guessing that's probably in the 60 to 80 pound range. I mean, it could be 100, but it's probably around 80 pounds to add that kind of stuff to it. So, you know, kind of makes you wonder where they came out, you know, with something like that. But
remember, it's not a race car. So it's in describing that car, it's not a race car, but it's a car that can be raced. Anything with a fucking Helifant in it.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's not a race car, but it's a car that can be raced. And they probably moved that engine back quite a bit to really kind of lighten up the front end a bit more, especially if you're adding all those intercoolers and stuff. So anyway, it seems good. One last thing I want to touch on before.
What's the retail price tag on that vehicle? Taking everything into consideration, because they had to do the molds for the carbon fiber.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what they sold it to Ralph for, but what do you think it would cost to build that vehicle?
You know, all that one-off carbon fiber, and you got to hand lay that up, and giant autoclave. Honestly, I think if you went in there and had to write a check to get this car built, it's about $600,000. That's my guess.
That's about what I would, I guess 3/4 at the most. I don't, who knows? But, you know, tooling that huge pieces of carbon fiber.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Now,
my God. I couldn't imagine.
Look, there are some high-end cars. There's some Riddler cars. I'm not saying it's Chip Foose or Troy Trepanier, but, you know, or Bobby Alloway. But those guys, I mean, there's been talk of those cars costing upwards of $1 million and taking 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking about something different, because those guys are literally like hand fabricating or machining everything from scratch.
Everything.
Like literally everything from scratch. And hiding bolts and then the painting and the coat. Like there's just so much. Like
the Ring Brothers.
Right. I mean, to really, really get into it. But look, this car, although a very, very cool car, a lot of the carbon fiber, but the engine, I think, was just kind of repainted and put in. Right. There wasn't, that's it. It's a crate engine painted and put in. The whole like rear differential was something that was bought from a partner, right? The brake package and stuff. But when you get into, you know, the most expensive like Riddler cars, everything's pretty much made. You know, your brake calipers aren't, but
money's going into the labor of tooling that one off, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to paying for the first mold of a carbon fiber 68 Charger, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just imagine if you had a full carbon fiber body on one of those vehicles, like the Ring Brothers. That'd be like a $2 million vehicle. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think of back in the day, what was the – there was like a really – big price, like when Celine was doing the S7, which had a carbon fiber body on it, and that was quite some time ago. And I think someone overseas, maybe Italy, had to make the bodies. And you know, they're kind of like, "Oh, the car's expensive; it's almost $1 million, whatever, $500,000." And I think he said something like, "The body alone was $100,000. It cost $100,000 to make that body." You know,
back then too.
Yeah, back then. And it's when we talked about the Bugatti, right? I drove the Chiron Pure Sport, and I was like, $150,000, $200,000 for what? For less paint? And they're like, yeah, because we do carbon fiber bodies. But if you want any of it exposed, it costs more money because the weave has to be perfect. And someone released the pricing and the options of the upcoming Koenigsegg Jesko. And it's weird because the online configurator for that, I think you have to be a qualified buyer just to go online and use that thing, because they're only making like 125 of these cars. And they said, if you want an all raw carbon fiber body clear coat on it, it's $435,000. Basically, the price of a high-end Ferrari or a Lamborghini Aventador. You could get the raw carbon fiber. It's a lot less if you paint the car, and if you do kind of half paint or a tint or like a metallic over it, and you hide some of the weave, it's like, you know, it's $280,000 or something, you know, $250,000 or whatever. But it's like a $435,000 option just to get that. I was like, that's a cool car. Fucking paint it. Just paint it.
Hello. Yeah.
You know, if you went to them and go, hey, you know, paint it, but maybe just do like a raw carbon fiber, like stripe down the middle. They're like, great. That's $180,000 for that stripe.
Oh, we can do that.
Listen, if you went and you bought the new GT500 and the racing stripes are included, but the painted on stripes that a few people got, if that's a $10,000 option, then you're like, why? We're like, well, now we know why. Because to do it all hand done or something, you know, it costs a lot more. All right, we've got to give up this studio and do another podcast. But yeah, guys, thanks. I appreciate it. It's a good show. It's fun. We'll catch you next week. I know we've got a lot of stuff going on, but we'll be here. We'll be here next week. And so until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course. Who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.